To be your host again today. And oh boy, every week we've made a commitment. If you've tuned in more than a few times, you may have heard why we do this show every week. There's a commitment, just overview of course, to contribute and make your life better. And to me, doing that involves fulfilling a mission, a prayer. I have a mission that is an overriding mission to find and share whatever is needed to joyously reunite everyone with their source at a spiritual level, not at about religion. And I believe that when we think and feel and act from the idea that we're always connected to this source, then I feel like grace prevails and total wellness can be restored. With that in mind, each day I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. So that's the direction. That's the inner guidance system that's working, and oh, I am just so thrilled to keep bringing good things to you. And before we get started, I want to invite you, of course, to take a visit to the sponsor of the show. The sponsor is the comfort technology that you could find at advancedliving.com. Go visit there. You'll find this plug-in device that many people are calling a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, because you look at it and it looks like a plain digital clock that you'd see on your nightstand or desk at work. But when you plug it in, it's like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It's like this beautiful, pure energy that mitigates the stress of electropollution and just helps relieve a lot of the stress that we deal with day in and day out. It's easy, so check out advancedliving.com for the comfort technology. And now, oh boy, yes, how about a treat? You say you got stuff bugging you? Well, who doesn't? And yes, there's ways. It's sort of like, well, if you practice yoga for 10 years, that's going to help you. And if you, oh, there's so many things. If you totally change your diet, which takes a while. Well, what if, folks, what if there was a gentleman that was going to come visit you that could, in a brief amount of time, help you have 50 simple ways to help find more peace and clarity and open up new possibilities for your life in the midst of all the stress that's going on? Well, I couldn't find him. No, wait, I did. Just teasing. This gentleman is here with us today, and we're going to welcome soon the wonderful Donald Altman. He's the author of 1 Minute Mindfulness, and it's a wonderful book. He's done some other books, too, The Mindfulness Code and Mindful Eating. And he is known as America's mindfulness coach. And he's a practicing psychotherapist, and he conducts mindful living and mindful eating workshops and retreats through colleges and community centers and healthcare organizations. And of course, if you're wondering, well, how could I ever locate this guy? Well, what if you went to the web to 1MinuteMindfulnessBook.com? Okay, so now, come on in, Donald.
Hi there, Ken, and all your audience. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. And I want to tell you, I love the blessing that you did to open up this show with. And you really point out how, in just a short period of time, by stating that blessing, you can align your yourself with the direction and the beauty of life and the goodness of life. So I want to thank you just for doing that.
My pleasure. And we're both very much devoted fans of having something that we can call on quickly to help us in the midst of so much going on. And your book, oh, 1 Minute Mindfulness, wow, this is just a thrilling addition. And so to get started with this, of course, it has the name 1 Minute Mindfulness. And so I got to know, well, this next minute, why is this just this next minute so important?
Well, you know, this is a great question, and it's really been an evolution in my work because I had spent time as a monk, and I've sat for many, many hours in meditation. And what I came to realize is that if we can look at things in the next minute in a fresh, new way and awaken to the possibilities that are inherent here, it could completely shift our lives, and we can do it in 60 seconds. So I know that may sound pretty amazing to some people, but it really works.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Wow. And I guess
it's really about taking off some of the old filters, too, that we may have set in place. We may have a whole series of, you know, anxiety scripts running in our head that keep us from really seeing what's here, from seeing the beauty and the goodness and the inherent decent nature of people around us and ourselves, even if we're stuck in that old script.
Ah.
And so this allows us to see all the little, the 1 minute mindfulness is about seeing all the little hidden treasures, things that are already there but maybe hidden from view from you. And when you're able to see them, it's like, wow, it's like a veil has been lifted. And then, you know, it's very joyful to be able to do that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I talk about refreshing. I don't know about all the networks, but a number of just the major networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, the evening programming is a predominance of things with intense drama and terrible things happening with people. And I mean, it's just like hour after hour, and it's sort of like when you're talking about different scripts, how many of us in our culture have spent time through childhood watching cartoons, which actually a lot of times display a lot of violence, and then go into watching this and then thinking, wow, the scripts that we've been exposed to in this stuff, we're not thinking necessarily, boy, this stuff is having an impact. We're just sitting and watching sometimes. But I think you might be able to tell us, does this stuff actually start to imprint in some ways? And isn't that possibly another reason why we need to have some of this 1 minute mindfulness?
Absolutely. I believe that our environment actually shapes our biology. And how you pay attention, what you pay attention to, really sculpts your brain. So imagine if you're seeing all these different kinds of negative stories. It's actually firing up the inner, you know, it's called the limbic system, the inner emotional part of your brain, and turning it on, turning the volume on. And when that happens, it kind of blocks out a lot of other things that are available to you because you go into a survival mode. You're on edge, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're in that mode, everything you see is filtered through that mode. And so a lot of times, it, for example, if you're in that mode, if you're more on edge, it's harder to listen to somebody. It's really harder to kind of open up and be available and present 100% to that person if you're already had this script playing in your head about something that was dangerous or potentially threatening, right? And so, yeah.
Ah, okay. And, so what you mentioned, what you know, this stuff keeps you from being present, and then when we're not present, what does that lead to?
Yeah, it can get us stuck. And think about how many times you maybe been stuck in an old story of abuse or hurt or injustice. And I'm not saying that that those kind of things are good, but if we're stuck in them and we're not able to move on. So that's what 1 minute mindfulness can help us do. It can help us to move forward. You know, I worked with a lady once, and you mentioned I work as a psychotherapist, and this lady came in to see me, and you know, my first session is, you know, I'm trying to get a lot of background and history, and she kept going back to this story about how her mother had abused her, and this lady was in her 60s, and these stories were completely predominating her reality. And even though I tried to redirect her, you know, I wanted to learn about this and other things in her life. I said, we'll get back to that story, but right now I wanted to learn some other things. But she kept returning to it. And at one point I said, wow, it's really interesting. I've kind of observed here that you've been, you know, talking a lot about the story about you and your mother, and you keep returning to it. Are you aware of that? And she said, no, I really, you know, she said, at one time in my life, I tried to count the number of times I was thinking about my mother and the stories of things she did to me, she said, but I lost track. There was so many of them. and she said, but I do know that when I don't think about it, I'm much happier.
Ah, boy, talk about a nice way to distract someone. They've been telling this story, and it's like, how many times have you told that story?
Yeah, right.
And they'll be busy trying to count it up and stop telling the story.
And I think our stories are important, but we need a new story. We need a story that describes of the places we want to go, the positive aspects of our lives. And it, you know, and so we need to see: are we getting stuck in an old story, a negative story, and how is it impacting me now? What would my new story say about me?
Yeah.
Where am I going? Where do I want to go? In the next 60 seconds, and I have several, and they're all short chapters, too, and there are a lot of exercises or practices that you can do in 1 minute, and some of them are about asking yourself just simple questions in the next minute so you can kind of reflect and say, oh, what do I really want out of this next minute? What is my purpose here as I walk through this door and enter a new room and there's going to be somebody else in that room? And what is my intention as I step over that threshold? And to just be able to pause just for a few seconds and ask yourself that and to take some centering breaths and to really feel the preciousness of this body that we inhabit and then to enter that space, that can shift your reality from in the next 60 seconds to being something that is very precious and very treasured for you and help you get the most out of that next minute.
Mm.
And don't we want experience in life? Isn't that what we're really craving?
Yeah.
And I think what happens when people are, you know, distracted by technology or TV or whatever, they're getting a virtual experience, but they're missing out on the real experience. You know, the real meaning and purpose that they really crave. And I think this is what speed can do to us. We get going so quickly that we feel like we're in a blur and we're really missing our own lives.
Huh. Well, I love the way you've been sharing about opening up a pathway of possibilities and the difference between that and noticing, have we had a pattern going on? Is there one particular story, or is there a theme that started with one story but is repeated many times with different players, but still the same theme of some sort of abuse or negativity? And then, interestingly, here you are helping us to learn that, well, there's some ways that we can step out from under that repetition into something better. And I thought to myself, I was imagining walking into a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and we all pretty much have an experience of ordering from a menu. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be an interesting restaurant if it had a range of things? They have a show on TV called Hell's Kitchen. And
I have seen that.
And
funny
and,
show.
it's a little amusing when, as a spiritual man, that's they talk about creating the most high quality food,
mm-hmm.
and mostly what I see is people under stress cooking and yelling and cursing and I thought, boy, isn't that the energy we all want in our food?
That's a real metaphor, isn't it, for what happens, how unnutritious life is, right? If you're living under that constant stress, you can't really put together the recipe for a life nutritious, life filled with variety and fun that you want to create.
Right, and you've probably heard this story that I heard first years ago from Skip Ross, who was a motivational speaker many years ago, and he tells the story of a young couple, and they have their first child, and the child, it's some months into the child's life, and he's about to walk, take his first step, and dad's got the camera, and mom's holding the baby, and he's just all set, and he's stabilized, and he's moving his foot forward, and he's shifting his body, and it's going to be his first step, and ups, he moves his body too far ahead of his step, and he falls over, and so dad comes in, grabs the baby, picks him up, puts him in the crib, and says, "That's it, you've had your chance to learn to walk. You blew it." And then he goes on and says, "Wait a minute, folks, we don't do that. How many chances has that baby learned to get to walk? Well, in most households, as many as it takes for him to succeed." And so here we are calling forth through the mindful practice, let's get it right the next time. Let this time be better. Let this time.
Mm.
So anyway, that's what I'm sensing, that you're helping us to bring ourselves to that place. And this is wonderful.
Yeah, and it is about releasing that need to get it to be perfect. And a little baby actually falls about 10,000 times until they get it right. But they don't stop. They don't judge themselves critically. Right?
No.
Now I'm going to give up. We'd all be crawling around on our rears if that were the case. But we don't give up. And so how do we define that falling when we fall down? Do we define it as a failure? Do we, create a dualistic way of thinking about it? I can be a success or it can be a failure. Or is it a learning experience? Is everything we do really some kind of a learning experience? Now, I have a chapter in the book devoted to this called Escaping the Perfectionism Trap.
Mm.
And I talk about how perfectionism is unforgiving. It demands nothing less than achieving total success by meeting the highest standards of excellence, and how that creating that need for control is also about fear of failure. And wanting to avoid, rejection or disapproval from someone. And so I have some questions for people to reflect on, such as, do you delay starting projects because the outcome must be perfect? Do you delay completing projects because you worry the outcome won't be good enough? Do you worry excessively about how others will judge your work? Are you your own worst critic, always thinking you could have done better? And so I have these questions so that people can start to think about new ways of describing what happens to them when they don't, quote, fit that having met perfectionism standard. And the practice, a little practice I have here, is about creating a definition of failure that takes into account the importance of learning and growing through mistakes and missteps.
Yeah.
And...
yeah.
How important it is to be kind to ourselves in this next 60 seconds.
Mm. Oh, you have any little helpful things you might be willing to share? from your book?
One is just the thought that you know, sometimes we rate things on a 1 to 10 scale, and I've got to reach a 10, the best, or it's not good enough. And I introduced the idea in the book that 7 is really the new 10. Because 7 means it's good enough, right? That 10 is really unattainable. The extra effort you put in, the 30% of extra effort you put in to turn something from a 7 to a 10 is really counterproductive, because you could use that energy for something else, right? Instead of the worrying and the focusing and trying to make something so-called perfect that nobody would even notice the difference between that 7 or that 10.
Huh.
And so when is good enough?
Ah, that's
and to be more forgiving of ourselves. And, yeah.
Wow. So as you're sharing that, Donald, what's fascinating is I was watching on one of the sports networks, they were talking about some of the athletes who were pursuing different things, whether it was bicycle or Ironman or gosh, just most any sport. And what was interesting about it was, because this is dealing with Olympic caliber or professional caliber, and it's like, oh, well, if you're going to do this, they say you just have to make this your life and give up everything else. And I'm going, well, I can understand that might be a path for some people,
mm-hmm.
but to have that a pervasive way of thinking of this perfection stuff in every job and in every activity kind of thing of going for this 10, it excludes all kinds of other stuff. And the price of going from a 7 to a 10 is like giving up most of your life.
There's a huge cost in that. There really is. Yeah, and that is something that I want people to start to think about, and as they become more forgiving of themselves and broaden their view to take in more of life and to enjoy more of life, because if you are just so hyper-focused on that one thing, then you're really missing out on the bigger picture.
Yeah, that when there's sayings out there, you know, like a contest, and someone's involved in a contest, and they say, second place is first loser.
Oh, I hadn't heard that before. It's pretty sad, huh?
that
particular phrase is kind of a
yeah,
unfortunate way of looking at it.
Well, to me, they use it for motivation in that particular event.
Yeah.
I will win, I will settle for nothing less than that. It would be interesting for me if people applied that to some other focus besides an athletic contest, like their relationship with God or themselves or their family. I will settle for nothing less than a fabulous relationship with my God.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but no, it's like I got to catch this football or win this bicycle race.
Right.
So it's kind of intriguing. Now,
the point is, we're already winners. Really.
Yeah.
Because we have this incredible gift of awareness and attention, which is probably one of the most precious gifts to have, is conscious awareness. And to think that we can decide how we want to use that is just really amazing and powerful, that we can shape our own brain.
Mm.
And that's extremely hopeful.
Yeah.
That we have the power to do that, and to break toxic habits or addictions, and to move in directions that really give us greater, you know, life satisfaction, not just for ourselves but for others. Because we're all in this together. And that's the other thing I think that a lot of times that people, when they think about mindfulness, and they think, oh, isn't meditation just sitting by yourself and going off and being alone? And the nice thing about mindfulness is it's not. 1 minute mindfulness is about how I'm in relationship to everything in my life.
Mm.
Not just my inner feelings, but to everybody in my life.
Wow.
Everything out there that I come into contact with. And that through doing that, I can create a created experience, a shared experience of meaning and purpose, how I decide to enter into that relationship. You know, a lot of times we have people in our lives who are difficult. There's always some so-called, you know, difficult person, right, in our life.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times if we're able to take off our filter and just and enter that relationship from a place of curiosity, not wanting to change that person, not wanting to have to get them to come to our point of view, not having to resist them, but to simply understand them. That alone is, you know, is kind of a gift that we're giving someone, and it can shift a relationship. It can take off that filter that says, oh, this person is a that or a this, when actually we're all very complex. And to see that, you know, we could enter a relationship and not treat another person as an it to be manipulated or to get something out of it, but to see them from the I-thou perspective, that this is a dynamic relationship, something that is for always changing, right, and that we're in this together, that it's a co-experience of this moment. What do I want that moment to be like? Do I want to shut off? Do I want to be have that moment be filled with my resentments or anger toward that person? Or maybe there's something else there. You know, I worked with a lady as an illustration of this. I worked with a lady once who felt her mother, that she couldn't succeed no matter what she did with her mother. And she would, her mother would either complain about how she raised her kids. She was, if she was doing too much for her kids, her mother would say, oh, you're one of these helicopter moms. You got to give your kids some space. And then if she gave her kids more space, her mother would tell her that she was not supervising them enough. Right? She felt like she just couldn't win, and it really frustrated her. And so I suggest that she, the next time she talked to her mother, that she not listen, to, not pay attention to the content so much as the subtext, the emotional feeling underneath, and try to understand her mother from that perspective. And she came back, she did it, and which I think was wonderful and takes courage to look at things in new ways. And she said, you know, what came to me when I was hearing, really just really hearing my mother, was that she's lonely. She was trying to connect with me. She doesn't know how to do it. And so she would just try to, you know, I think she's just really trying to connect with me, and she's lonely. Hmm. So she had a new perspective because she was able to let go of, in the next 60 seconds, let go of some of her old filters and stop taking it personally and just enter in a more I-thou relationship with her mother right then. And so this potential is there. It doesn't mean that your boss is going to suddenly grow a heart of gold, right, if he doesn't have one. And it doesn't mean that you can, but what it does mean is that you can experience things a little differently and that you can respond differently. And that's something you have control over in the next 60 seconds.
Ah, so she was able to come from a place of, there's the interaction with her mom and her mom giving advice.
Yeah,
and was able to step back from that and ponder, what is my mom trying to accomplish? What needs is my mom trying to fulfill in her actions?
Right,
and,
exactly.
And she began to check in on that level of, oh, we've all got needs, and so here's an action. But what's the need that's inspiring this action?
Yes, exactly. And really, don't we all want the same thing? Don't we all want love? Don't we all want to be understood and appreciated and heard? Yeah. So some of us go about it, and you know, some people go about it maybe in a in not the best manner. But really, underneath, that really is the need.
Yeah. And so, boy, that I love that. That's a factor of helping us to be able to. To shift where we're at in the middle of something and to go, oh, wait, this is always about the same thing, meeting needs.
Yeah, and the other thing that this, as I'm talking with you, Ken, that this is bringing up, is the idea that mindfulness can help us tap into our deeper wisdom by looking at things in this more evolved way, by opening up in the moment, by having more acceptance.
Yeah.
And by seeing things in a fresh way, and that allows us to tap into something that we all have,
Yeah.
And that's really cool. That
yeah.
is our deeper source.
And I'm guessing that some of these abilities that we're speaking of, they tie into, I'm guessing, possibly what you call being present?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do talk, I mean, I think a lot of the one-minute mindfulness practices I have in the book are about developing your presence and so that you can really, and presence is about how you use your intention and your attention right now. And if I could just for a moment, you know, I have five different sections in the book that I just wanted to mention about how I design the book to be able to use, to be able to have people use it no matter what they're doing, that it fits into how we live. And that's what I wanted to create with this, was a very usable, practical book here.
Yeah,
so
would you go over those five parts of your book?
Part one is called 1 Minute Mindfulness for Home and Play. And so all things having to do with from the first moment you wake up in the morning to which I have a section, a chapter called Morning Awakens, to Sacred Nighttime, which is the last chapter there. So there's 10 chapters for each section. Part two is 1 Minute Mindfulness for Work and Creativity. And I started from even chapter 11 is Driving as Preparation. Even when you get in your car, how are you preparing yourself for work? How are you preparing to get ready to be in the moment, to be flexible, right?
Yeah.
Because the other part about mindfulness and 1 minute mindfulness is that it's about participating in this moment in a very flexible and adaptable way. So if you felt that you've been stuck in certain ways in your life and you've repeated the same things over and over, this is this form of mindful awareness can get you unstuck from that and help you participate. It's almost like living life as an improv. You've all seen improv comedy somewhere, right?
Uh-huh.
And how much fun people are having with that. And that's what this is like. People have asked me, well, what's it like to really do this? I said, well, it's like living in an improv. And you're living lighter. And you're living you're living and enjoying the uncertainty that may appear in the next moment because you're with it. You're unfolding the moment with yourself.
Mm.
And so that's what, and I have the last chapter in that section was leaving work behind. How do you even leave work, leave behind the work mode that a lot of people get in so that you can then retransition yourself back into your home?
Yeah, well, that's where the fun of driving in heavy traffic comes in. No,
exactly.
No. I've just finished a stressful day at work.
Yeah, and people come home and they carry that with them, and it can be very damaging, actually, for their relationships when they bring that in back into the house. And they need to find a way to discharge that, and that's what I talk about there.
Yeah.
And then part three is 1 minute mindfulness for relationships and love, because, again, mindfulness is relational, and the first chapter in that of 10 there is about saying hello with love. How do we greet the people who we really care about in a way that is not routine or just out of habit, but really make a connection?
Ah.
And then, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What is one of the major complaints about relationships being taken for granted, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because when I do some couples work, too, and invariably, when I like to ask couples this question, which is, what is one small, realistic thing that you would like to see your partner do this coming week? Something that's very concrete. And it's almost always has to do with either how their partner says hello to them when they come in the door or how they say goodbye. Either at night when they go to sleep or goodbye when they leave in the morning. And it has a lot to do with really building feelings of security and safety and trust in the relationship. So those are critical. Yeah.
Yeah, boy. Now, we won't probably be seeing many breakthroughs in your work in Marine drill camps, but...
Well,
thank God, the rest of life...
Well, yeah, unfortunately, most of us don't have to be in a, I guess, a marine drill camp. But
right. I mean, and are you acting? In this way, I laughingly bring that up because my dad didn't know how to give compliments, but he was there very much critical. Do this way. You made a mistake, and so he was concerned about me having my ducks in a row, as so that I was better prepared, more safe, more likely to survive.
Yeah, was he a Marine?
No, he'd been an orphan, and
so he had a tough life in his own way, his own kind of boot camp.
But here you are helping us to make mention. Okay, if so much of our life is on this mode of just automated responses, I'm working. Okay, this is this expectation, and it's like, how do we step out from that?
Yeah.
And come into, wait a minute, I am precious. Life is precious. Now I'm going to say hello to someone precious in my life.
And I think I really appreciate your sharing that story. I think we may have had a very similar father, and so that is really about people wanting you to protect yourself because they didn't feel safe, and so we need to know how to get beyond that particular story.
Yeah.
And although it's important, and we can understand that they came from the parents or the people who are difficult in that way or hard or, tough, really were just trying, that was their survival. But we can learn to grow beyond that and how we connect in relationships, and that's why I think this is so important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then that's covered in part three.
That's part three. And then part four is 1 minute mindfulness for health and well-being. So think about this for a moment. This is about how we come into relationship with our inner being in the next 60 seconds in a caring way. And so even from the first chapter I have there, it's called morning care. And it's to have people think about the little things that they do for themselves each day and to start to think about nurturing themselves. So, for example, I say use the next minute, and this is from that chapter, simply noticing the gestures of self-kindness we already practice can be an important step toward developing greater awareness of morning care. Because a lot of people I have noticed don't even, morning is a blur, and they don't even know that they're doing good things for themselves. So I say use the next minute to take a personal inventory of the 6 beneficial behaviors that follow. So I have body care, brushing your teeth, showering and hygiene, moving, stretching, and exercising.
You're supposed to do those in the morning, huh?
Yeah, okay. And eating nutritious food. And you just take an inventory. Am I doing those things? And then mind care, choosing clothes that help you feel good about your appearance, focusing with an intention, a meditation, or a centering practice, even if it's a 30-second or 1-minute practice, minimizing negativity and anxiety-producing stimuli.
Ooh.
So if you practice, what I say here is if you practice 2 of the body care and 2 of the mind care activities each morning, you're devoting valuable time to your morning care, even if you didn't think so. But this can get you to start thinking more about that. And I think the benefit of that is you can appreciate what you're doing, and that creates a new story. And then once you become aware of it, you'll start doing a little more.
Yeah.
A little more, right?
Yeah, I love it. So we mentioned in relationships about the problem oftentimes of the other partner feeling taken for granted.
Mm.
And then we tie it in here in this health, and you're talking about, so how often are we actually noticing when we're doing these things and you're reminding us? Because you figure over someone's lifetime, I don't know, the 30 or 40, 50, how many times have you brushed your teeth? And that's going to be a large number. And how many times did you before, during, or after look in the mirror with a smile and go, I like you for doing this for me?
Right, yeah. So
some way of acknowledging,
acknowledging
that you're doing something neat versus it's another chore.
Yeah. Exactly. In fact, I talk about the and I'll get to part 5 in a moment, but it's funny because I talk about the 2 ways of doing anything. So the one way of, you know, often we think about chores as being something that we don't want to do. That's
yeah.
one way to do it.
Yeah,
is
that's
to get it over with. Oh, I've got, you know, I really am in resistance to doing this thing. And it's kind of like, in a way, I'm rejecting this moment, right?
Yeah.
Rejecting this minute when I'm in resistance to it. I have to do it anyway, unless I want to go, for example, go to the, you know, the dentist and have my teeth drilled on, which I really don't want to have happen. So, or have the sinks have the dishes in the sink pile up, right?
Yeah.
Another chore, washing the dishes. Or the second way you can do things is you can brush your teeth or wash the dishes in order to brush your teeth or wash the dishes. In other words, you're entering 100% into the activity. You're participating completely with what you're doing. So that might mean you really notice how you're hand moves as you're brushing the teeth, feeling the bristles on the gum and the teeth, sense, you know, experiencing the mintiness of that toothpaste and the intensity of that flavor, right?
Yeah.
While you're washing the dishes, maybe you're feeling the drops of water, you know, dancing off your skin, maybe noticing how pleasant that feels, looking at the, appreciating the plate,
how
it glistens, the different colors there as the light reflects off it, as you're moving
arm
as you're cleaning it. Right, and completely.
Donald, if the advertising industry finds out about what you're trying to do, I think they're gonna try to lock you up because.
Well, and
because
you know,
this would ruin a lot of advertising campaigns.
Well, you know, and what I really think is if we could learn how to experience that kind of a thing, right?
Yeah.
These are not, you know, you don't have to buy a new toaster to feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
Right. And these are things that you can experience and be in joy and enjoy right now, and it's available and present for you. And it's just a shift in how I experience this moment.
Yeah, and so that's another part of this
part four of your book.
Part
four, health and well-being, exactly.
And now, do people get this? I don't know how, you know, on your website, Amazon, where do we get this?
Yeah, you can go to, I have a one-minute mindfulness Facebook page, which is kind of fun because people can go on that page and get and see all the different things I'm doing with one-minute mindfulness, and kind of neat.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I want to put this interview up there, too, for people. If you only got caught part of it or you want to hear it again. And in addition, you can go to you can get the book from 1MinuteMindfulnessBook.com, the website, or which is spelled O-N-E, 1 Minute Mindfulness Book, or, you know, on
and that's
all the internet, Amazon,
letters, no
Barnes
spaces.
And Noble, and, it's in a lot of bookstores, too.
Oh, good.
So,
okay. Great.
Yeah, so a lot of ways to get the book, and
all right.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Oh,
and then
cool.
If I could go to part five.
Yeah, please.
Which is 1 minute mindfulness for nature, spirituality, and contemplation. So think about this for a moment. I mean, how frequently do you really stop and pause and contemplate, even for a minute, or look at nature for a moment, or find silence for a moment, or gaze up at the sky and the moon, right? Or contemplate messages of peace. I mean, these are all things that are in that last chapter. And personally, I mean, these are things that lately I've been finding, because I use all of this 1 minute mindfulness, because we're all subject to all the chaos and the hectic living, right?
Mm.
We all need to find ways to come into balance. And I've been really spending 1 minute here and there, really doing a lot of this nature, spirituality, and contemplation, and finding it is just really enriching my life in a lot of ways. Just personally, I thought I'd mention that. But even this little chapter, I have a chapter called Lessons from the Earth, and how can we spend a few seconds or a minute looking at the Earth and seeing what it has to teach us. You know, you may have heard of George Washington Carver.
Uh-huh.
He was the peanut guy, and
yeah.
He would sit out at, go out at 4 a.m, and he would sit and with the plants. And he said, you know, I never really discovered anything. The plants, when I sat in silence with the plants and let them know that I love them, he said, they shared all their secrets with me. And he said, if you share and sit in silence with anything and show and with love, you know, anybody said they will share all their secrets with you. Isn't that beautiful? And so
say that again. That's worth hearing again.
Yeah, he said if you sit and share your love and show your love to anybody and sit in silence in that way, they will share all their secrets with you.
Mm.
And so I think nature has a lot of secrets it's willing to share with us. You know, I want to mention one of those things that happened to me in my own life. It was many years ago, and I was facing having to make a big change in my life, but I was resisting making the change. And I had gone to this little park and was sitting under this beautiful tree, and it must have been the end of summer or something like that, and I was kind of, you know, I was worried about making this decision, didn't know what to do. And then I noticed a couple leaves started to fell from the tree, and I was watching them, and they fell down near me, and I thought, oh, these are beautiful. And then I noticed another, suddenly some more leaves fell. This was a huge tree, and then all of a sudden, the tree let go. All the leaves, they all came down like snowflakes.
Oh my God!
and I saw that, and I said, oh my God, this is about letting go. Nature lets go. This is the message that I got from nature. It's okay. We all, you know, this is, if we try to hang on to anything, we wouldn't make room for the next season of our lives.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
I can just see the tree psychologist where the tree's going in.
I didn't need a psychologist there. I just had to be, yeah.
I don't know what will happen if I let go of my leaves.
And yeah, the tree had the faith. There will be another season.
Yeah.
And so it was really funny because I knew right then. I said, okay, I can move on.
Mm.
I can let go.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I think nature is always there if we just sit and open. I'm not saying you'll get that particular experience, but you'll get some experience. I worked with a guy who worked in an office just recently whose office was downsizing, and he came to me because he was so depressed. He said he would cry every day at work silently, I mean, off on his own, alone. And he said, you know, the office was, you know, downsizing, and people were very unhappy, and they'd lost that sense of cheerfulness, and it was very gloomy. And after teaching him, working with him on one-minute mindfulness, he came back one day, and I could see there had been a shift, a change. And he said, you know, I did the one-minute mindfulness breathing. He said, and then in my break time, he said, I went outside, and I looked at nature, and I was looking at this tree, and these ferns had been growing up the tree. And at some point, he said, I noticed they'd cut back the ferns, because these ferns, I guess they're not good if they keep growing there.
Oh.
But he said, but then I saw they started to grow again. And he said, that was the message to me, that even if I lost this job, I would, he said, you know, nature has a way of, it just keeps growing. And I could keep growing. Maybe we'll be doing something different.
Yeah.
So he saw something there, and it helped him in the moment. And so if he had been lost in his sadness or his anxiety, he never would have noticed that simple little natural cycle that was right before him.
Yeah.
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 And so, so these are the kind of things that are in that last section of the book.
Ah.
I think are very very powerful.
Ooh, I like that. That's our section, Nature, Spirituality, and Contemplation.
Right.
Ah, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
it's just a wonderful, Donald, the way you've assembled something that people, I mean, they could read through the whole thing, or they could just pick it up and open to a page randomly, open this, they're going to get something.
Yeah, the way I like to look at to use this book personally, even, and out, is I'll just open it up, and I've suggested this to people too, is ask yourself the question, what am I supposed to learn today? What am I supposed to learn today? And then open it up, almost like the Tao Te Ching, like a kind of a, just you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah.
And something that can then point you in a direction. And I've had people say that when they do that, they always find something that resonates with them, with their purpose or with something in their life that they really do need to work on or to some little thing that they can see differently.
Yeah, and I love the way in the five parts, it's kind of like the Chinese medicine has the five elements.
And, oh, yeah.
And then you have five parts in this that
oh, that's
cover,
interesting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I'd add that for your
oh, thank you.
Enjoyment.
Thanks, Ken. That's fun to know.
Yeah. Sometimes we do things and it's a neat thing, but we haven't been clued in about. Well, see, this is some of the depth to what you've done, and so we have these five chapters, five parts of covering our life, and this is really great. I love it. And now, once again, folks, where would you want to go to find this book and learn more about our good friend here, Donald? Donald Altman, where would they go, Donald?
Well, they would go to, you could go to your Barnes & Noble or your independent bookstore and order it if they didn't have it in stock. You could go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or to my website, OneMinuteMindfulnessBook.com.
Okay.
And also, you know, I have been getting people writing to me, and I love that, too. So if you read the book and had some thoughts or ideas or just want to share an experience that you had from reading the book, that would be really cool. And so my email is on that website as well.
Okay. And then I see where people can participate in getting a newsletter.
Yeah, and you can get... you can get my newsletter, Mindfully Speaking, and that comes out once a month. And I always have a mindfulness reflection in there called A Mindful Musing. And then I have some new research. And there's a lot of interesting research coming out about mindfulness, and I'm always interested in that. You know, we're very scientifically minded nowadays, and there's a lot of really cool research coming out. For example, there was some research recently, and I did have that on the website, about how the mind wanders. Most people's minds wander about 48% of the time.
Huh? No, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That was good. You almost had me there, Ken. But what they found was that when people's minds wander, they're less happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're less happy. It's not really what you're doing that counts, but how present you are with it. And that's a higher, a better way of measuring happiness. So, and I think that's what 1 minute mindfulness is about being present with whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
And so that newsletter, you can get that. And I think you get a free, when you sign up for it, you also get a free audio download for, it's a guided sleep meditation.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
A lot of people have problems, you know, falling asleep, and so it's a real nice meditation for helping people go to sleep.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a wonderful thing because, yeah, there's a lot of folks that, with all the craziness and stress and environmental toxicity going on,
getting
a good night's sleep for about anywhere from 70 to 100 million Americans, that's a wishful dream that hasn't come true.
Yeah, I think I've heard that the average American has a sleep deficit of between 2 to 500 hours a year.
Ugh.
And it's really affecting people. And so that's one of the other things I have people kind of pay attention to, and I have a chapter that talks about that as well, is how are you using technology? Because even at night, for example, if you're watching TV or looking at a computer or even a handheld device, the light, electroluminescent light, comes in through the retina, and it will delay your melatonin production. And melatonin is what kind of sets your sleep cycle.
Mm.
It delays it by an hour.
Ah.
And so a lot of people have daytime issues with concentration or cognitive functioning because maybe they're not getting enough sleep at night.
Yeah.
So it's really important.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is amazing. I am just so thrilled to be holding your book in my hands. And and just recommend that people take advantage of this.
It's a fun book too, and I think it's got a sense of humor that you know, I'm trying not to take it too seriously either. So I think it is a fast read and a fun read for people.
Yeah, well, we need that, something that helps us and is easy to digest too. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on and share this with myself and our listeners here. We're just thrilled and delighted for your good work, and just hope that you will continue to get this out to more and more people. And we just thank you, because I've now got 50 new ways to
right.
be more mindful, and not 50
yeah.
ways to leave my lover, or 50 ways through drinking to leave my liver, but you know, 50.
No, we don't want to do that.
No, 50 ways to be mindful. God bless you so much.
Well,
thank
God
you.
Bless you, Ken, and bless all your listeners. And I have enjoyed so much being here with you. And to me, this has been just a lovely conversation. I just found it a real joy. So thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure. And to you, Donald, to my beloved listeners, thank you so much for participating. And until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now. Let go of it.